The Gospel reading is taken from Matthew 15, 10 to 14 and 21 to 28. Then he called the crowd to him and said to them, "Listen and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it is what comes out of the mouth that defiles." Then the disciples approached and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees took offense when they heard what you said?" He answered, "Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. They are blind guides to the blind. And if one blind person guides another, both will fall into a pit." Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before me, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. This is the gospel story. May we learn from it today.
I think for most people this week, the highlight has been the eclipse, and it divided the nation right down the middle. There were those who had their glasses ready and their colanders and their bits of white paper, and they could look at the sun and see it. And there were the rest of us who, as my daughter put it, watched people watching the eclipse. It was all about being prepared. And I think the readings today have some guidance for us about being prepared, not for an eclipse, but for how we might experience God. How can we look at God and really see the beauty that is God and experience God through Christ in our lives? What kind of preparation is required? And in the passages, Jesus, there are two sections, aren't there? There's this conversation with the Pharisees, who he says, "Don't go that way, they're blind guides." And then there's this rather interesting story of his contact with the Canaanite woman. And I think it's that we want to focus on, because clearly there's something in that relationship that Jesus finds pleasing, and maybe an encouragement to us to know how better to prepare ourselves for some experience of God that we all want to have. And the first thing I think that quality that this woman showed was not to be blinkered, not to look through too narrow a gap, but to have a wide vision of the world. The Pharisees, I think you could say, were pretty blinkered. They had got this series of rules. There were apparently 613 different rules that governed all sorts of aspects of their lives, and it was very important for an Orthodox Jew to follow every single one. I mean, some of them were very sensible, love your neighbour as yourself, for example, but some of them were things like you can't wear a garment that's made of both wool and linen, and you can't eat certain meats, and that's why in the reading we heard the comment about it's not what goes into you but what comes out of your mouth that's important. And they were narrowly limited to this, not really expecting much else from God. I mean, they'd had this wonderful history of God doing all sorts of dramatic things with the people of Israel, coming out of Egypt and settling in Canaan, and the rule of David and so on. But now it felt as though things had got a bit stale, and they were blinkered. But Jesus didn't find that in the Canaanite woman. She was actually quite remarkable because she was flying in the face of what all her friends and family must have thought was completely nuts, because Canaanites, to situate the area of the Near East that Jesus was in, Tyre and Sidon, had their own gods. Baal was one of them, and there were others, mostly fertility gods or gods to do with the weather. And these were the gods that they would have expected her to go to get some release, go and do a sacrifice. But she isn't blinkered in that way. She's much more open to possibility. And so she goes to Jesus. And it's remarkable, not just that she goes to somebody of a completely different religion, but she goes to somebody of a nation with whom the Canaanites had a long-running hatred. You know, it was the people of Israel who came and took over the land of Canaan from them. And so here was this woman really stepping across the boundary, really risking a lot by going to Jesus, but looking beyond the narrow confines of her own life. And of course, what happened was entirely to her and her daughter's advantage. I wonder sometimes how blinkered we are in our faith, because it's so easy to think, perhaps like the Pharisees did only in our own context, that going to church, doing good deeds, being kind and gentle people, you know, that's really what's required. And of course it is required. But maybe we sometimes need a little bit more than that. We need to be a little bit more adventurous in where we look for God, where we seek God. I think possibly it's true that we can find good things in other religions. Often the other religions have a pretty bad press, but that's often unfair. And there's a lot of good in Islam and in the Sufi faith, even in Hinduism and Buddhism, qualities and things that can teach us about life that might expand our vision a bit. But I think it's the capacity to look beyond our immediate horizon in religious terms that I think we perhaps could learn most from here. Because we need to remember that our growth in faith isn't just about religious things. It's about life. It's about learning to take off any blinkers that we might have and see God in the whole of our relationships, of our experience of life, in all that we get engaged in, so that if we see, as sometimes we do, a real act of kindness just as we're out and about maybe, or if we experience something that's particularly beautiful or profound, these are experiences which are divine experiences. They're given to us by God, and the more we can be open to these and find in the world and in the lives that we lead in the world signs of God's presence, the more open we're going to be, the better prepared we're going to be for God to act in our lives and do things for us. I enjoy looking at, although I won't say I find them particularly beautiful, the paintings of Stanley Spencer, who interestingly in this congregation had a Methodist mother and an Anglican father. But he was grew up in a religious household and had a very profound faith. And he, if you know anything about him, you'll know that he lived in Cookham, and that a lot of his paintings are of Cookham, including, for example, one of the Last Supper, and one which he calls Resurrection, which is not so much about Christ's resurrection, but about the resurrection of us all at the end of time. But these are set in Cookham. And the people in these pictures are Cookham people. Scholars can identify which people he was actually painting when he included them in these pictures. In other words, he's seeing these religious things, what we think as religious acts, but he's seen them in the ordinary everyday life of the place where he lived. And I think the more we can learn to do that, the more we can learn to see God in ordinary things, the more likely we are to be open to God using us, more prepared to encounter him. Another quality that she's got, this Canaanite woman, is that she's open to being changed, to change happening. She wants her daughter, who's beset by evil spirits, to be healed, and she believes that it can happen. Again, something probably the Pharisees would not have been likely to believe. They, as I say, had got a bit complacent in their faith, no longer really expected much of God. But she did. She expected that if she came to Jesus, then she would find healing. She could come and she could say, "Help me," and she would be helped. And she comes really, I think, out of desperation. She says, "Help me." Simple, two simple words, which say so much about how needy she was. She'd got to her wit's end in caring for this poor daughter of hers, and she needed help. And I think when we come in our prayers and in our lives and our faith to say to God, to say to Christ, "Please help me," it's often because we're feeling desperate. We're feeling at the end of our tether. We've lost any sense that we can do much ourselves about what's going wrong in our lives, or the tragedy that we're facing, or the illness that's encountered in us, in ourselves or others. And so we come and we say, "Help," and we're given it. Not often in the way we expect, not often in particularly dramatic ways, but we can be absolutely sure that if we ask God to help us in any situation, it will be easier to deal with than it would have been had we not done that, even if we don't get the outcome always that we'd hoped. Our prayers change us, as well as changing the situation sometimes as well. But I think what we perhaps could learn from this incident that we're looking at today is not just that we can say, "Help me," in situations when things are bad. Because I think sometimes we need to say, "Help me," even when on the surface of life things seem to be all right. Often life goes on and we get a bit complacent. We've stopped believing, really, that God can change things in ordinary situations. Yes, we believe that God might change things in crises, but actually the offer of Christ is to be with us in the ordinary things of life and to make changes there that might be necessary. And I think for many of us, there will be areas of our lives where we feel as though things would be better if they changed. Maybe a relationship, or maybe some task that we're engaged in that it isn't fulfilling anymore. Maybe we need to change it or stop it. Maybe it's a particular routine that we'd got into. I think you'll have to do this work for yourself, but there may be something in your life that doesn't work at the moment. It isn't quite right. It looks okay to everyone else, and most of the time you can cope with it quite happily. And you can get a bit complacent, a bit like the Pharisees were, that, okay, well, this is how it is, we've got to put up with it. But the woman felt that there was no end to the changes Jesus could make. And she wasn't prepared to sit back and just let things be. And sometimes we need to look at those areas of our lives where we think change might be of advantage to us or to other people, make us happier, make us more able to serve God. Changes that perhaps we need to make, and we need God's help to do it. The image that I often bring to my mind when I think about this sort of thing is an article that I read about a medical missionary who went to a hospital in Kenya. When he got there, he found that the equipment was in a dire state. A lot of it just didn't work. Some of it only occasionally worked, or didn't work quite right. And he had he was a bit of a wizard with things, you know, like some people are. And he gathered together bits of the broken equipment, and out of those broken bits, managed to mend the bits that weren't quite working, and even to make some new bits of equipment. So he turned the broken bits into things that could be used. And for me, that's an image of what God does. There will be areas of our lives where things aren't working, where they're broken. And if we bring those to God, then God can integrate them into the rest of our lives in a way that's creative. Bring what is useful out of those bits of our lives where we feel nothing's happening right. Bring the good bits into our lives and use them and help us to become more creative, and perhaps leave the others the rest of it discarded, as indeed he left the medical missionary left a lot of items unused because there was no use for them. And there'll be things in our lives that God doesn't see any use for. But there are things where there is brokenness that we feel, where God can make something out of those broken bits of our lives and heal us, to help us to change. And I think that's the change we need to believe in. That's the kind of change the woman believed in. And I think we can prepare ourselves to be changed by believing in it. But then I think the last thing I want to say about this woman is that she was real. You know, she came to Jesus just as she was. She was absolutely desperate. She was at her wit's end. She hid nothing. She threw herself entirely into Jesus' hands and said, "Help me." And Jesus clearly responded to her. I would imagine that he respected her courage in breaking through those barriers that I mentioned. I'm sure he respected her wit. You know, when he said, it's not right to throw the children's food to the dogs. In other words, it's not right for me as a Jew to spend time using my abilities to heal Gentile people. She says, but surely the dogs can eat the bits, the crumbs that fall from the table. And surely it's okay to give a little bit to the Gentiles like me, the people who aren't Jews. And I think he would have respected that wit, that humour. And indeed, it seems as though he changed his own view as a result. It does look possibly as though his own attitude to people who weren't Jews might have changed as a result of what that woman did. And so there was a warmth there, there was a respect there. But I imagine that what he felt most powerful in this woman coming to him, being absolutely real, was her vulnerability and her willingness to just risk everything, her reputation, her hopes, by giving herself to Jesus and saying, "I'm trusting in you." And I think this is what God respects in all of us if we're able to do it. It's really something which we can do in our prayers day by day, is to offer ourselves to God in that way. And not hide anything from him, as she didn't. Actually, I don't know how often we do hide things from God. I think most of us realize that God knows us so well that you can't hide anything from him. But I think sometimes what we need to do is to make sure we're not hiding anything from ourselves. If we're going to come to God in our prayers as real people, bringing everything that we are, we need to bring those bits of us that we actually don't like looking at. And sometimes there are bits, aren't there, feelings that we've got that are perhaps not ones we're particularly proud of, that we perhaps might avoid if we're feeling resentful or hatred, or if we're feeling frustrated. We bury those feelings because we know they're not right, and somehow our consciousness puts them below the surface. We're not aware of them often, and so because we're hiding them from ourselves, there's a sense in which we can't offer them to God. The classic Christian approach to this goes back to the 16th century to St. Ignatius of Loyola, who was a Roman Catholic. He was a saint, obviously, but he was a monk. But he invented a kind of prayer called the Examen. I can't go into details with it. If you're interested, it's E-X-A-M-E-N. Google it if you're interested. But the point about it that I want to bring to your attention is that the idea is that at the end of every day, or the beginning of the next one, you look back over the events of it. And you look back not just with a view to asking yourself what happened, but asking yourself, what did I feel? What did I really feel about those things that happened yesterday or earlier today? And the idea then is you stop hiding these hidden feelings from yourself because you deliberately ask yourself to reveal them to yourself. You really look at your life and say, what was I actually feeling? Was I feeling, oh yes, that gentle, generous smile that you gave to that person, was that what you were really feeling? Or were you feeling really furious with them? And it's the real feelings that we need to bring to Jesus. And that prayer is a way of doing it. And I like the phrase, I've mentioned it here before, I know, but I like the phrase from Gordy Knight, Dorothy Sayers' detective story, where the priest in a prayer says, oh God, help me to take my heart and look it in the eye. And I think that's what we need to do. Because that way we're opening ourselves to God's activity at all levels of us, not just at the superficial level. We're opening ourselves to the kind of changes that God can bring to our lives. And there we can perhaps to find the courage to break through the barriers that enable us no longer to be blinkered, but to have a wider vision of where we can see God. But ultimately the important thing is that we come to God as we really are. And if we come to God like that and say, help me, you can be sure he will.